This is the last day of this October 2009 seven-day session. I'm going to take up another koan today. This is number 84 in the Blue Cliff record, Vimalakirti's Gate of Non-Duality. The Blue Cliff record is the second most widely known collection of koans after the Mumonkan. Consists of 100 cases, and this is number 84. So Vimalakirti asked Manjusri, "What is the Bodhisattva's Dharma gate of non-duality?" Manjusri answered, "To my mind, in all dharmas, there are no words, no explanations, no presentations, and no recognition. It is beyond all questions and answers. That is entering the Dharma gate of non-duality." Then Manjusri asked Vimalakirti, "Each of us has had his say. Now tell us, good man, what is the Bodhisattva's entry into the Dharma gate of non-duality?" And then it ends there, except for a comment by Secho, a couple comments, who says, "What did Vimalakirti say?" And then again he says, "I have seen through him." So some background material. Vimalakirti, Roshi Kaplow always used to say in Teisho, is one of the three distinguished laymen in Buddhist history that have been always singled out as for their great enlightenment. The other two are both Chinese, Fudaishi and the so-called layman Pong. He is the main figure in one of the most esteemed sutras in the Zen school, which is the Vimalakirti Sutra, or actually the Vimalakirti Nirdesha Sutra. Just means the Discourse of Vimalakirti Sutra. This sutra was composed, I'm reading from the Encyclopedia of Eastern Philosophy and Religion. It was composed about the 2nd century. The original has been lost. And Vimalakirti was said to be a wealthy follower of the Buddha, who lived in the midst of worldly life, yet followed the way of the Bodhisattva. It says here that the popularity of this sutra is due to its stress on the equal value of the lay life and the monastic life. This was not the party line for most of the early centuries of Buddhism. He's a semi-legendary person, this Vimalakirti. The sutra is an illustration of the Buddhist way of life as a path to liberation and of the practical application of insight into the emptiness of existence. One day, Vimalakirti didn't show up for one of the Buddha's talks, and word was sent that he was sick. So the Buddha sends a group of his students, his senior students, to find out more about his condition. But because of Vimalakirti's legendary skills, insight and skills at Dharma combat, most of them decline. They don't feel like they have what it takes to face him. But finally, Manjusri agrees. Manjusri, you know, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, who is legendary in his own right for his wisdom. He agrees to go, and then the rest tag along. And then they go to him and they ask him, "What's up?" "What up, Vimalakirti?" they say that Manjusri was followed by 31 bodhisattvas and 32,000 arhats. Arhat is said to be a fully enlightened being, and others. All of whom, this is the legend, this is the legendary part, all of whom could fit into Vimalakirti's room, which was 10 feet square. So Vimalakirti gets the ball rolling. He asks to them as a group, "What is the Bodhisattva's gate to the one and only?" And then each of them gave his answer. It says here, some said, "The Dharma is unborn." That might have been Bonke. "The Dharma is unborn." This comes from the same sutra where Bonke got that phrase. "The Dharma is unborn, therefore it cannot perish. This is the gate to the one and only." Some said, "There is no ego, therefore there is no external world. This is the gate to non-relativity." Many other sayings followed. More examples of that. "Transgressions and blessings are all empty and not different. Samsara and nirvana are the same. There are no gains and no losses." And one by one they presented their understanding until all 31 of these bodhisattvas had finished. And then Vimalakirti turned to Manjusri and put the same question to him. Oh, but first, excuse me, first, before they get into the dialogue, first they ask how he's feeling. And he explains that he's sick, and this is what he is reputed to have said there to the group, and to Manjusri especially. "Manjusri, my sickness comes from ignorance and the thirst for existence, and it will last as long as do the sicknesses of all living beings. Were all living beings to be free from sickness, I also would not be sick. Why? Manjusri, for the Bodhisattva, the world consists only of living beings. and sickness is inherent in the living world. Were all living beings free from sickness, the Bodhisattva also would be free from sickness. For example, Manjushri, when the only son of a merchant is sick, both his parents become sick on account of the sickness of their son. And the parents will suffer as long as that only son does not recover from his sickness. Just so, Manjushri, the Bodhisattva loves all living beings as if each were his only child. He becomes sick when they are sick and is cured when they are cured. You ask me, Manjushri, from where comes my sickness? The sicknesses of the Bodhisattvas arise from great compassion. Let me just comment on this. This is from the sutra, the Vimalakirti Sutra, where he begins, "My sickness comes from ignorance and the thirst for existence." Ignorance is the root cause of suffering. Ignorance of the way things really are. Ignorance of the nature of reality. It's ignorance that gives rise to greed, anger, and delusion. And it's ignorance that causes us to crave existence, the thirst for existence. This thirst for existence is the engine behind the ego and all of its mischief in the mind. This wanting to exist as an entity, as a permanent entity, a self. Well, of course, we can all agree that that's only natural. If you're alive, you want to remain alive. But it's when we cling to this sense of self that we generate all of these troubles for ourselves. And we get a real close look at that, don't we, in Sesshin, where we discover how difficult it is to detach from thoughts. Thoughts which almost entirely revolve around the I, the me, and the my. How stubbornly they continue to insinuate their way into the mind, these thoughts. Discrete, particular thoughts of particular things and more subtle thoughts that we may spend many sesshins not even aware of, kind of a conceptual cloud in the mind that only through long practice becomes apparent. The way that we obscure the direct experience of anything, just the way we obscure direct experience with this mind of thoughts. The way these thoughts mediate direct experience. Right there we see in this the tenacity of this thinking mind. We see what Vimalakirti here is calling the thirst for existence. Well, it was the Buddha who first pointed to that as the real root of suffering. Vimalakirti Ramakirti says, for the Bodhisattva, the world consists only of living beings, and sickness is inherent in the living world. It's coming to terms with this, coming to terms with the first noble truth of suffering, where that's where practice begins in earnest. Hakuin, many centuries later, Hakuin put it another way. He said, no matter how little sickness there may be in one's body, there is pain in his heart because there is delusion in his mind. This is a chronic sickness of all sentient beings. It's this thirst for existence that drives those in the animal realm to, rather than be eaten, to eat, rather than being killed, to kill. It's this thirst for existence which drives those in the Asura realm, the realm of fighting demons, to base their existence on power and play that out through endless competitiveness and fighting. It's the thirst for existence that fuels the craving of those in the hungry ghost and thirsty spirit realm. And it's a thirst for existence which drove those in the hell realm to where they are. And the same with the other two realms of unenlightened existence, our own realm, the human realm, and the realm of devas. And then it's after that that little speech on sickness that each of these 31 bodhisattvas presents his or her understanding in terms of the Dharma. Focusing particularly on the non-duality of reality. This is the real core of the Dharma. Form is only emptiness, emptiness only form. This sutra and its narratives are depicted in many much of Buddhist art, including the great famous Buddhist caves in China, Longmen and Yungang. And so then this brings us up to the point where after the 31 bodhisattvas have presented their understanding, then Vimalakirti wheels around on Manjusri and says to him, asks him the same question, what is the bodhisattva's dharma gate of non-duality? And that's the first line of the koan. And to which Manjusri answers, to my mind, in all dharmas, there are no words, no explanations, no presentations, and no recognition. It is beyond all questions and answers. That is entering the Dharma gate of non-duality. Well, Manjushri here is employing lofty method of negation, of not saying what it is. Anytime we say what the truth is, then the implication is it's this and it's not that. And that limits it, of course. As soon as we say the truth is non-duality, then that, just by using words, putting a phrase on it, then we limit it. This is the bind of using words that Zen has always recognized. So Manjushri uses his great wisdom to single out that which we must not be attached to. No words, no explanations, no presentations of any kind, and no recognition. Another translation is no activities of consciousness. That covers a lot, those four negations. And then for good measure, he says it's beyond all questions and answers. So he goes right to what's happening right there in the room. It's beyond all questions and answers. This is difficult to top, Manjushri. And it's reminiscent of the Buddha's own famous statement where he said, not this, not that. The great Japanese master Daiyo Kokushi had a go at this too, in talking about this Dharma gate of non-duality. He said, there is a reality even prior to heaven and earth. Indeed, it has no form, much less a name. Eyes fail to see it. It has no voice for ears to detect. To call it mind or Buddha violates its nature, for it then becomes like a visionary flower in the air. It is not mind, nor Buddha. Absolutely quiet, and yet illuminating in a mysterious way, it allows itself to be perceived only by the clear-eyed. It is Dharma truly beyond form and sound. It is Tao, having nothing to do with words. Oh, my good worthy friends gathered here, if you desire to listen to the thunderous voice of the Dharma, exhaust your words, empty your thoughts, for then you may come to recognize this one essence. In the fuller version of this koan that includes a pointer, notes, a commentary, and other verse, in the commentary, right at this point, it goes like this. Since the other 32 had used words to dispense with words, Manjushri used no words to dispense with words. At once he swept everything away, not wanting anything, and considered this to be the Dharma gate of non-duality. He certainly didn't realize that this was the sacred tortoise dragging its tail, that in wiping away the tracks, he was making traces. It's just like a broom sweeping away dust. Though the dust is removed, the tracks of the broom still remain. It's a tough crowd. So after he had his say, the Manjusri turns to Vimalakirti and says, "All right then, each of us has had his say. Now tell us, good man, what is the Bodhisattva's entry into the Dharma gate of non-duality?" And then we're left hanging. That's the end of the case, except for Secho's comments. The first of which is, what did Vimalakirti say? Another translation of this is, what will Vimalakirti say? This silent reply of Vimalakirti to Manjusri's question has come down through the ages to be called the thundering silence of Vimalakirti. Herman Melville said, "Silence is the only voice of our God." It's the silence that unites us all, unites all religions. It's a silence that points to that which is beyond anything that can be said about it. Silence, all is resolved. Walter Kaufman said, "Words signify man's refusal to accept the world as it is." the silence is frightening to some people. We've had people at an introductory workshop during a sitting jump up from the ton, run out. And there are people who cannot be silent with others. They have to keep up a chatter, a kind of a wall of words to hide behind. On the other hand, we don't want to make the mistake of thinking silence good, sound bad. The silence, this thundering silence of Vimalakirti really is pointing to silence that is beyond the ordinary dichotomy of sound and silence. It's silence with a capital S, silence, the silence that is in sound, the silence that gives rise to all sounds, the stillness, the emptiness that gives rise to form and is at the same time no other than form. There's an American poet who died in the last century by the name of Edgar Lee Masters, who wrote a wonderful piece about silence. This is how it goes. I have known the silence of the stars and of the sea, and the silence of the city when it pauses, and the silence of a man and a maid, and the silence for which music alone finds the word, and the silence of the woods before the winds of spring begin, and the silence of the sick when their eyes roam about the room, and I ask for the depths of what use is language. A beast of the field moans a few times when death takes its young, and we are voiceless in the presence of realities. We cannot speak. A curious boy asks an old soldier sitting in front of the grocery store, "How did you lose your leg?" And the soldier is struck with silence, or his mind flies away because he cannot concentrate it on Gettysburg. It comes back humorously, and he says, "A bear bit it off." There's the silence of a great hatred, and the silence of a great love, and the silence of a deep peace of mind, and the silence of an embittered friendship. There's the silence of a spiritual crisis through which your soul, exquisitely tortured, comes with visions not to be uttered into a realm of higher life. There's the silence of those unjustly punished, and the silence of the dying whose hand suddenly grips yours. There's the silence of those who have failed, and the vast silence that covers broken nations and vanquished leaders. And there is the silence of age, too full of wisdom for the tongue to utter it in words intelligible to those who have not lived the great range of life. back to Secho, where he says, "What did Vimalakirti say?" What was he pointing to? We'll stop now and recite the four vows.